Bottom of the ninth, it's 10-1 Wausau here on WFHR Wisconsin Rapids.
There's a quote about the importance of setting goals. If you don't know where you're going, any path will take you there. This holds true for things that are important to you financially as well. To set your financial goals, think about your priorities. Outline them as either must-haves, such as a comfortable retirement, or wish list, perhaps a vacation or entertainment. You'll want your goals to be specific. Assign estimate dates and cost to each one so you can plan how much to save and how much time you will have before you need the money. Next, hold yourself accountable to stay on track. This involves actively tracking your progress, maintaining your focus, and using these time-tested strategies. Diversify, own quality investments, and keep a realistic perspective. A financial advisor can help with this. Finally, enjoy that sense of accomplishment when you reach your goals, seeing your efforts literally pay off.
This content was provided by Edward Jones for use by Clay Kanoki, your Wisconsin Rapids Edward Jones financial advisor at 715-421-0958.
At Hazelden Betty Ford, treating mental health isn't just about breaking old patterns, it's about braving new ones. As the leader in alcohol and drug treatment for 75 years, we know caring for addiction, anxiety, depression, and trauma goes hand in hand. We're here for you with new tools when life breaks down. Discover your path to better mental health at hazeldenbettyford.org/Wisconsin. Sponsored by Hazelden Betty Ford Foundation.
Now, let's get back to exciting Rafters baseball here on WFHR.
Rafters have three outs remaining to score nine runs, down 10-1 in the bottom of the ninth, and they're going to be led off here by Hayden Carlson, Landon Gaz, and Lachlan Maud. They're 6-7-8 batters due up in the ninth. Carlson, the right-handed hitting shortstop, getting things started against Tucker Russell, who takes over for Connor Hill. Tucker Russell, another left-hander from the Woodchucks, and first lefty that they're going to be seeing this game. Connor Hill, in his performance, went two innings pitched without allowing a run, allowed just one hit, no walks, no strikeouts, no hit batters, no wild pitches. Six batters faced and 25 strikes. First pitch on the way to Hayden Carlson is in there for strike number one. 0-1 the count, and Carlson 1-for-3 in the game. He singled back in the second inning. He's reached base multiple times in his last five games for the Rafters. 0-1 count is a little bit away for ball number one. 1-1 the count. So that streak is on the line here. His multi-time on-base streak. He's only reached the one time today. 1-1 count, misses inside for ball number two. A 2-1 count. So a 2-1 count. Landon Gaz on deck, and will be another right-hander. The Rafters have a few righties in the lineup. 2-1 count on the way home, misses inside, and now 3-1. So Carlson will certainly take a walk. He's done so a few times in his early Rafters career. 3-1 the count from the left-hander on the mound. Pitch comes in, it misses low, and there is the second time Carlson's been on base. Keeps the streak alive here in the ninth inning. And it brings up Landon Gaz with a runner on first and nobody out here in the bottom of the ninth. And Landon Gaz, 0-for-2 in the game. He's up for his fourth time tonight. Right-handed hitting left fielder. It's a righty-lefty matchup. Tucker Russell brings the leg up, fires home, but it misses high for ball number one. 1-0 the count, and Landon Gaz drew a walk back in the sixth inning. That was his last time up. 1-0 the count on the way home from Russell, and it's taken away for ball number two. 2-0 the count, and Gaz, he rounded out 1-3 back in the fourth inning, lined out to left field in the second. It was a pretty well-hit ball, but right at the left fielder Galvin. 2-0 count, it's fouled back brings it 2-1, and Jazz trying to stay up there and stay strong in the plate. 2-1 the count, and looking at Tucker Russell's numbers this season for the Woodchucks. Russell making his 8th appearance out of the bullpen for the Woodchucks. Misses this one low for ball number 3. 3-1 the count. Russell's got a 4.7 ERA, 10 strikeouts in his 7 2/3 innings. Runner still on first base, and Russell gives him a glare. Now back home, he brings the pitch in, but it is fouled back to bring the count full, 3-2. Russell from Wichita State, native of Olathe, Kansas. Junior, who is 6'1", 200 pounds. His last time out was against Kenosha back in the first half on June 29th. Not his best night. 3-2 the count. Russell brings it home, and it's a grounder towards short. Picked up, 6 off the ground. Throw over to first. Man, what a play by the shortstop, Jake Berkland. Goes 6-4-3. He was down on his backside and able to make the throw over to second to retire Hayden Carlson. And at first base, they got Landon Gaz. So double play, and it's another double play for them, their third of the game. And it brings up Lachlan Maude. Rafters down to their last out here in the bottom of the ninth, down 10-1. First pitch on the way home gets a swing and a miss from Lachlan Maude to bring it 0-1. And Maude, the right-handed hitting catcher, he struck out swinging his last time up back in the sixth inning, but he's 2-for-3 on the night. 0-1 count coming home, misses low and outside, now 1-1 the count. Started the game 2-for-2, he singled in the fourth and second innings, and in the second, it was an RBI for him. That is the only run of the game for the Rafters, that RBI single back in the second. The Woodchucks scored 3 in the first and third innings. They added 2 more in the seventh and ninth innings, respectively. 1-1 count, misses a little high for ball number 2. Now it's 2-1. Luke Skinner on deck if it gets there, and Lachlan Maude trying to keep this inning alive. Now the 2-1 count on the way home, gets a swing and a miss for strike number 2. 2-2 the count. And Maude down to his last strike. Rafters down to their last strike. Tucker Russell trying to finish the game off with a 3-up, 3-down ninth inning. We'll see if he can. Pitch on the way home. Breaking ball in there, called strike 3. And that does it for the game. Rafters can't get the victory as they fall 10-1. No runs, no hits, no errors, nobody left on base, and that finishes the night for the Rafters. Well, it was all around a strong effort from the Woodchucks as they were able to tack on 10 runs over the 9 innings and allowed just 1 run to a Rafters offense, which saw base runners in most of the innings this game, but it just wasn't enough. We're going to go ahead and take a quick break here, and when we come back, it's time for the postgame show here on WFHR Wisconsin Rapids.
You know that tune. You're a star. You know stuff. Why not win stuff? Maybe it's stuff about TV or movies, but still, you shine at useless information, and WFHR and Culver's want to reward you.
Welcome back.
Join the morning show Fridays for a chance to win one value basket and a kid's meal. Be our next superstar with Culver's Star of the Day every Friday at 97.5 FM WFHR.
What is dedication?
The thing that drives me every day as a dad is Dariana. We call him Day-Day for short. Every day he's hungry for something, whether it's attention, affection, knowledge. And there's this huge responsibility in making sure that when he's no longer under my wing, that he's a good person. I think the advice I would give is you don't need to know all the answers. The craziest thing was believing that your dad knew everything. So as a dad, you felt like you had to know everything. You had to get everything right. It's okay to make mistakes. As long as it's coming from love, then, you know, it kind of starts to work itself out. I want him to be able to sit back one day and go, we worked together, we did a good job.
That's dedication. Find out more at fatherhood.gov. Brought to you by the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services and the Ad Council.
Let's get back to the ballpark and more Wisconsin Rapids Raptors baseball on WFHR.
Well, post-game show comes your way here on WFHR Wisconsin Rapids. Thanks for tuning in tonight. It was another rough one for the Raptors. They drop it 10-1, and well, man, oh man, this is one rut that the Raptors are going to hope to forget very shortly, as things just didn't go their way tonight. Final score 10-1, and well, let's look back at how it happened. And well, that first inning was not a good one. Jeremy Jones, the starter for the Raptors, he allowed four straight base runners. It was an RBI double from Max Galvin, RBI double from Max Solis, and then a sacrifice fly from Dom Rodriguez made it 3-0. The Raptors, though, in the bottom of the second inning, they responded with a run of their own, an RBI single from Lachlan Maude, although that was the only run they would get all game long. Nolan Bernard ended up going six innings, allowing just the one run, and had seven strikeouts before handing it off to Connor Hill. But we'll get to that a little bit later. And well, Jeremy Jones, back in the second inning, he had a shutout frame, three up, three down. He had retired eight consecutive batters up until the top of the third inning, and then five straight reached for the Woodchucks to take a big 6-1 lead in the top of the third. From that point on, though, Jeremy Jones retired 10 consecutive batters since the end of that third inning until he was pulled in between the sixth and seventh innings. So at that point in time, still 6-1, and then in the top of the seventh, the Raptors turned to Tristan Crusenberry, although Crusenberry allowed the two-run home run from Max Galvin, which made it 8-1. The Raptors, in the bottom of the seventh, finally got to see a new pitcher, Connor Hill, although Hill would go six up, six down in his two innings of work. Eighth inning comes around. It was scoreless for both teams, but top of the ninth, and another two-run home run for the Woodchucks, this time from Max Solis, made it a 10-1 game. And in the bottom of the ninth, the Raptors, three up, three down against Tucker Russell, unable to get anything going. So final score 10-1. Let's take a look back at the stats from the night. And for the Raptors, man, not too much going around. It was a two-hit game for Lachlan Maude. He went 2-for-4 with an RBI, the only RBI of the night for the Raptors. Hayden Carlson reached base multiple times for his sixth straight game. Akko reached twice as well. But that's about it offensively. On the pitching side, Jeremy Jones went a Raptors season high, six innings pitched. And even though he went six innings, he did allow those six runs. Kenny Schultz, two runs allowed over his two innings on two hits, two walks, two strikeouts. Lots of twos for him. Had a 2.0 whip. And, well, Tristan Crusenberry allowed the two runs in his one inning of work. That's about all for stats and numbers from the game. And, well, taking a look ahead to the next game for the Raptors, I mentioned it a little bit earlier, they are heading on the road back to Wausau, where they look for revenge. The Woodchucks have had their number this season, but the Raptors looking to get back on the right track tomorrow night. It's going to be Seth Spencer out on the mound for Wisconsin Rapids. He had previously gone 5 2/3 innings his last time out. That was the Raptors' season high in innings pitched up until tonight when Jones went six innings. So it's been a little bit better runs-wise for Seth Spencer as of late. He's hoping to keep that momentum alive after his 5 2/3 innings performance last time out, hoping to continue to go deep into a game, but we'll see if he can. He's going up against Wausau tomorrow at the Borough. But that's going to do it from our broadcast tonight, and the final score 10-1. A big shout-out has to go to, of course, our good folks up at WFHR for helping organize all this and making sure that we get on the air. It can't be done without WFHR, of course. And, of course, the Wausau Woodchucks broadcaster, Matt Clark, he helped provide a ton of information for me and a great friend of mine. And Man, he's always such a great guy, and if you get to meet him, you'll know exactly what I'm talking about. He was hugely helpful to our broadcast here, and hopefully he had a good time at Witterfield as well. And, well, part of that experience has to come from the rest of the press box and the staff here in Wisconsin Rapids. Big shout-out to all of them, and, of course, the coaching staff from the Rafters for always being there and available for media inquiries. Another shout out has to go to our pregame guest of the show, Jack Wiesinger. And Jack had plenty of things to talk about, a returner to the Rafters, and had a great conversation with him on the pregame show. But that's going to just about do it for our broadcast tonight. One more time, final score, the Rafters 1, Woodchucks 10. From myself, Austin Thomas, and from the rest of the Wisconsin Rapids Rafters, thank you, and have a great rest of your night.
People in a lot of communities, too far. And then you go down to the future investments, you know, the affordable housing initiatives that are there, the fair housing initiatives programs, a lot of the stuff that was to help people like this guy with disabilities is going to be gone. So there's no lifeline. There's no hand up. There's only a boot to the back of the neck. And what's going to happen is states are going to have to make choices. And those choices in a lot of states are going to be, well, screw you. Sorry. Better luck next time. And oh, by the way, the Medicaid cuts are going to devastate rural hospitals. And we've been talking about this for a while. So none of this is new. There'll be a massive increase in uncompensated care, which means that people who do have insurance, even if you're not on Medicaid, you're going to get screwed by this. Because, like, I've got great health care. If there's no hospital to go to, do I have great health care? And we've done all this. We've done all this. Well, not we. Republicans have done all this so that they could give tax cuts to the very wealthy. Massive handouts that they could make permanent estate tax changes so that the wealthy can keep more. Does nothing to help the poor or disabled. No, doesn't have anything to help the working class. This is all about enriching, well, the wealthy at the expense. This is Robin Hood in reverse. It is what it is. And I know I got a front row seat listening to people debate the, you know, there's good things in there, like the no tax on overtime or the no tax on tips. And you go, no, those aren't what they appear. And they're short term, 3 years. Those tax cuts for the wealthy, permanent. They ain't going away. Made sure of that. And the governor of the state that I live in here in Pennsylvania, Josh Shapiro, came and said, look, these cuts, we're not going to be able to absorb them. It means programs are going to get cut massively. Here in Pennsylvania, we've hit a record low of uninsured people, just over 7%. And now what they're talking about could make that enormously worse. Because understand, in this state, almost a quarter of the citizens rely on Medicaid. And you go, but Rick, you know, we got to feed the rich people. And the weird thing, again, to me, the weird thing is it's going to harm the people who voted for him the most. It's going to harm the folks who donned the red caps. And I know there are people out there saying, good, screw them. No, those are people's brothers and sisters and mothers and fathers. Being stupid shouldn't be a death sentence. So for me, there's an opportunity. And I've been saying this for a while. There is an opportunity to do the right thing. There's an opportunity to move us in the right direction. Will we do it? That's the question. Want to hear your thoughts? Email me, rick@therickSmithShow.com. What do you think? Is this something we can possibly do? Is it something we should allow? Can we undo the damage? Will Democrats, if they take power in a year and a half, will they undo or try to undo the damage they've done? Want to hear your thoughts? Email me, rick@therickSmithShow.com. Quick break. Right back.
We'll be right back. We are AFGE, the American Federation of Government Employees. We represent 700,000 federal and D.C. government workers who are the vital threads of the fabric of American life. We support our nation's military. We take care of our nation's veterans. We protect our nation's borders. We respond to our nation's crises and natural disasters. We provide services to our nation's seniors, the American Federation of Government Employees. We work for America.
We are AFGE, the American Federation of Government Employees. We represent 700,000 federal and D.C. government workers who are the vital threads of the fabric of American life. We support our nation's military. We take care of our nation's veterans. We protect our nation's borders. We respond to our nation's crises and natural disasters. We provide services to our nation's seniors. The American Federation of Government Employees. We work for America.
Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
So as you can tell, a little upset about this big, beautiful nightmare. And as all of us should be, honestly, quite frankly, everyone should be upset by what's going on. And I know, there's some sweeteners in there. There's some things they're going to be good. We've been hearing this, and this is the thing that's been bothering me. We've been hearing that line for decades. You know, if we just give the rich more, if we just give the rich enough, if we just give them more, if we just double, triple, quadruple down on trickle down, if we just keep, you know, fighting away for Reaganomics, it's going to work this time, promise, Scout's honor, this time it's going to work. Promise, I swear. And you stop and you think about, you know, where we are in this moment. It goes back to Ronald Reagan. It goes back to the Republicans, you know, being bought and sold by corporate America and the very wealthy. And look, Democrats came along a little bit later, but still somewhat along. But you stop and think about it and you go back to the Reagan years, because, you know, I remember growing up during those times. What you saw were massive tax breaks for the wealthy. When Reagan took office, the top marginal tax rate, and I know, hold your hat, because people not that old are going to freak out, it was 70% at the very top. He dropped the top marginal tax rate all the way down to 28%, which caused massive, massive deficits, massive debt, and put us on the path to where we are today. This is Reaganomics. This is supply-side voodoo Reaganomics, for those old enough to remember George H.W. Bush's comments. And what'd we do? We gave it all to the wealthy. And what happened? Well, they were smart. Because I remember being told, these are smart people. They know what to do with the money. You know, and it'll trickle down. And the reality is, they are smart people. They do know what to do with money. They make more money for themselves, at the exclusion of everyone else. What also came parallel with tax cuts for the very wealthy were assaults on organized labor, firing the Patco workers, 11,000 striking air traffic controllers, not just fired, but banned from federal service for the entirety of their lives. This was a guy who full tilt boogie assault on collective bargaining. And what you saw is private sector employers saying, hey, it's open season. And thus the beginning of the end of a prosperous working class. You also saw, you know, if the two weren't bad enough, tax cuts for the rich, assaults on workers' ability to fight for better wages, hours, and conditions. Well, we're going to deregulate. Deregulate the financial markets, deregulate corporations, make stock buybacks great again. 1982, the SEC under Reagan changed the rules to allow stock buybacks. And what have we been living under? Oh, yeah, no raises for you, worker who made us the profit. No, we're going to buy back our stock. Because thank you, Ronald Reagan. And the weird thing is, and this is the bizarre part, there were Democrats, Reagan Democrats, who were proud. Not as crazy as the MAGA red hat wearing kooks that I have to deal with a lot of times. But still, they were Reagan folk. So while Reagan was encouraging outsourcing and offshoring of jobs with his trade policies, deregulations, a high dollar policy, and all the other things that came along with it, while these Reagan Democrats were losing those manufacturing jobs, losing those high paying jobs that were going overseas. Well, you know, blame the others. And that's where we started. You know, you go through the Reagan era that cuts the Social Security. They're cutting a social safety net, the stagnation of the minimum wage, weakening protections of OSHA and MSHA, and the same stuff. Attacks on affirmative action, attacks on anti-discrimination policies. And what do we have today? The difference was, during the Reagan era, it was black people. It was. You know, they were driving around in Cadillacs, drinking Dom Perignon, eating steak off your dime. We know that. We've all heard it. The welfare queen. The welfare queen wasn't a white woman living in a trailer park. No, no. She was a big black woman wearing a fur coat, driving a big Cadillac, living high off the hog. And yet they never found her. They could never find the quote unquote welfare queen. It was, again, a creation of their imagination. Coming out of think tanks, get people upset, especially white people, because they're the one, we're working. Fast forward to today. What is it? It's not black people as much. It's brown people now. You know, they're living off your dime. They're taking your Social Security. They're living on Medicaid. They're getting thousands of dollars. Your hard-earned dollars. They're taking. And my mind goes, yeah, it's true. It is your dollars, because the rich people aren't paying any taxes now. And they're quite, if you go on social media, you got rich people going, yeah, I'd be stupid to pay taxes. It kind of makes you wonder. And so when people ask, you know, how did we get here? Well, this was very, very predictable. This isn't for anyone who paid attention during the 80s into the 90s. Everyone knew. The difference was, is Democrats tried to convince themselves that, you know, well, you know, we can do what they're doing, just better. Which brought us the Clinton era. I have never been a Bill Clinton fan. Never was. The deregulation, the assaults on our safety net were softer. Sure, the Republican would have been worlds worse. Put a little lipstick on the pig, still sold it. And what did it do? It harmed a little less, but it still harmed. So as I look at this, this bill, not popular. This is an opportunity for Democrats to go, hey, you know what? Maybe, here's a thought. Maybe we can come up with some policies that are going to make workers' lives better. Maybe we're going to make real change. Because understand, this is the comment I've gotten from some friends, is that, you know, Republicans do all this really far out overreach stuff, and Democrats never do. Democrats are always accused of it, but they never actually do the full thing. They do half measures. The Affordable Care Act is a perfect example. Half measure. Affordable Care Act was the Heritage Foundation's answer to Hillary Care. Hillary Care, while complicated and the media ran all over it, was still a universal idea. Was still everyone gets it. Everyone's in. Everyone's participating. Everyone gets care. Still better in my view. Complicated, sure, a little bit, but ultimately better than what we've got. The most expensive health insurance, health care system in the world. And yet we don't get the best outcomes. So what does all this mean? I start off with a story about a homeless guy that made me angry. And for each one of us, I think we have to find that moment. What is that story? Is it meeting this homeless guy who I actually walked away from going, I wish I had that kind of spirit. Because at no point was this guy, oh, woe is me. He was upbeat. He was like, hey, I got to get this. I got to get moving. I got to get a tent. the kind of person that, the kind of mentality that you want, that you want to encourage, that you want to help. Now, I know I'm going to get a bunch of emails. Well, why did you do more? Because I'm one guy. This is why a government of, for, and by we the people can solve these problems. We can prioritize and fix these problems. The question is will we? Will we have our policymakers do things that are going to make lives better? And this is the call for Democrats. This is your moment. Your moment is right now. Your moment is to be able to step forward and say, I've got a plan. And that plan, I hope gets us power in 26. Quick break, right back.
Locally grown radio, WFHR. As Wisconsin is summer weekends being spent on the lake, this is the Civic Media Radio Network.
I'm meteorologist Mace Michaels. Increasing clouds for tonight with some showers and thunderstorms likely late, lows in the mid-60s. Scattered showers and thunderstorms mainly tomorrow morning, mostly cloudy for the afternoon, and a high within a few degrees of 80. Sunshine and around 80 again Wednesday. It's 71 right now.
The Maggie Dawn Show.
Madam Mayor Satya Rhodes Conway from the fabulous city of Madison.
A lot of people say, I don't like politics. It's all dirty and angry and blah, blah, blah. It's really about caring about your community, finding a way to like bring it back to people talking to each other.
Yeah.
About what is important in our place and how do we take care of each other and use the levers of government to do that. That's really what it's about.
The award-winning Maggie Dawn Show at its new time, weekdays 4 till 6 p.m.
You're listening to pre-recorded content.
Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
Evidently, maybe you didn't know. Evidently, there is a new political party. There's a new political party. Yes, a new political party. It's called the America Party. Yeah, evidently, Elon Musk has launched his very own political party because he's angry. He's angry at Donald Trump. And this is one of those things. If you remember at the beginning of the year when I was saying, hey, you know, the fun, the entertainment is really going to be when the bromance is over and they start going after each other. It's been fun. It's been fun so far. I'm here to share some thoughts on, well, just how fun. I've asked my good friend Sarah Burris to come share some thoughts. Sarah's a reporter over at Raw Story, rawstory.com, the website. Sarah, thanks for taking time for us.
Hey, how are you?
So what do you make of the new political party?
You know, welcome. I just feel like, is this going to be like the awkward white dude party? You know, the incels, or like, I'm curious if this is going to be more of like the libertarian types and the people who really never fit in well with the Republican Party.
Yeah,
I think that basically it will then split the Republican Party, and I wouldn't be surprised if some Democrats kind of went over to that, but I don't see a ton of them doing it.
Well, if they're stupid, I mean, I have a lot of my left-leaning friends who are, you know, are labor Democrats going, hey, we need a labor party. This ain't that. Let's start there. It's never going to be that. But there's a lot of people who are going, yeah, two-party system's broken. Let's get a third party. And you go, yeah, our system, no, that's not. Go ahead and play. Let the billionaires spend tons of money. But it's not all that they're going to crack it up to be.
That's the thing, is he's going to have to go state by state to make sure that he gets this specific party recognized in that state and for the elections. And, you know, it's because like our elections are just not decentralized. Like they're not really run by the federal system. They're run by the states. So, you know, it will cost a whole lot of money, but he's got it. And I'm like, please feel free. Welcome.
Yeah. Now, what's interesting on the other side of this, what is interesting is you have the OpenAI CEO, tech bro, Sam Altman out there saying that, you know, I find myself, how would I put it, politically homeless, not homeless, but politically homeless, because according to him, that the Democrats are no longer the party that encourages a culture of innovation and entrepreneurship. He says, I'd rather hear from candidates about how they're going to have the stuff billionaires have instead of how they're going to eliminate billionaires. Thoughts?
I mean, I think the sad thing is that none of us will ever become billionaires. And a lot of folks sort of live by this idea of one day I'm going to be a millionaire. And so I want to cut millionaires' taxes because I'm going to be there soon. And you have a higher chance of, you know, being struck by lightning. And so this idea of a billionaire complaining, first of all, billionaire complaining, shut up. Nobody wants to hear you complain. You got $1 billion. Shut up.
Yeah, seriously. Shut up.
Secondly, I mean, if you want to spread the wealth around, that could certainly be making a whole heck of a lot of millionaires. I mean, if he wants to invest money in innovation, like that's what venture capital is all about. So dump all your cash in a venture capital firm and start helping out. But the government, you know, is not the one that fosters new corporations. And Donald Trump's government in particular is not one to foster research, any kind of scientific investment, or any investment at all in future technologies or future science, because some of them don't even believe in science. And Doge just went through and cut everybody.
Yeah, but here's the thing. This is the part that's interesting to me. It's this idea that everyone can do it. You know, it's so simple to be a billionaire. Look, I did it. Everyone can do it. So then this kind of, because the magic of the free market, the magic of entrepreneurship. He says we should encourage people to make tons of money and then also find ways to widely distribute wealth and share the compounding magic of capitalism. One doesn't work without the other. He says you cannot raise the floor and not raise the ceiling. And look, if everyone were a billionaire, is it just maybe I'm wrong, but would $1 billion be $1 billion?
Yeah, that's the thing, right? Is that's what inflation looks like. And this idea that everybody can pull themselves up on their bootstraps has slowly dwindled over time. We have become this country where the American dream is not necessarily, you know, it's certainly not what it's used to, but it doesn't necessarily exist anymore. Certainly not in the way it once did.
Yeah.
So, I mean, it's like it used to be that you could work really, really hard and be able to afford to buy a house and live a comfortable life. And now it's like, it doesn't matter how hard you work. If you're capped, if you're either through education or experience, like you really can't get there no matter how hard you work. So.
And what's interesting to me, a guy like this who, you know, hello, OpenAI, he's going to be the winner in all of this as AI and automation and robotics, as all of the jobs that these things are going to gobble up. He's going to be the guy standing at the top going, well, if you had just worked harder, if you'd have just innovated better, you know, sorry, you know, good luck eating dirt.
Yeah. Welcome our robot overlords. I think too, the thing about, our economy is we've had the development of more billionaires over the last couple of years.
Yeah, because of our horrible tax system.
So, you know, again, like you are consistently rising above everything and doing better and better at a time when everybody else is getting screwed.
Yep.
You know, you're getting this on the backs of everyone else. You're using the benefits of a government who has paved the streets and, you know, hires and pays the firefighters and the police officers and all of the services that are needed for the country. And so, I don't know. I just, again, put your gripe in to a billionaire.
No, look, and these are the people who talk about, you know, government shouldn't be picking winners and losers. Well, on the 4th of July, you just picked the big winners, which are the Sam Altmans of the world, and not the working people, not especially not the low-wage working people, because this one big nightmare, this is going to be really bad for low-wage workers, and even worse for low-wage rural workers.
Oh, for sure. Like that's the sad thing, is it really is going to be Trump voters who are going to hurt the most. And they've done this so that it's front loaded with benefits, and then those benefits expire. And so like a couple of members of Congress and some senators I heard being interviewed on Friday and Saturday, and they were all trying to spin this as, you know, there's all of this good stuff in there for
3 years.
Yeah. And the response was, yeah, but those expire in 28, right? And so the tax cut to billionaires is permanent. The cuts to Medicaid are permanent. I mean, all of these major cuts that will essentially bring down key parts of our government are permanent, unless you get somebody takes over the House and the Senate and can roll all of that back.
Yeah, I mean, and this is going to be an election. It's going to be an election thing, you know, come 28. And the hope is that Democrats in these 3 years actually go, hey, these are things that we want to move. And maybe we've got ideas that are even better. Maybe you got a chance here. But Republicans are masterful at playing this game of, hey, we gave you something, even though they're walking. We gave you a cookie, even though they're walking away with the cookie jar.
Yeah. I had heard that I guess Donald Trump's pollster is trying to figure out a way to rebrand the bill. And I mean, it's kind of one of those things where you're like, I don't know how necessarily you're going to accomplish that, because it's already kind of out there. Like, yeah, you would have to change everybody's minds pretty quickly.
No, you just put Joe Biden's name on it.
Oh my God. That's the thing, right? Like, they're even... with the disaster down in Texas, I heard Kristi Noem on Sunday trying to blame Joe Biden for it. So it's just, again, like they're desperately going to try and figure out a way to blame Democrats when, you know, no Democrat voted for this thing. And it's not just in the election in 4 years. We've got an election coming up next year. And, you know, I look at people like, you know, Van Drew in Wisconsin won by 11,000 votes. And like the candidate who ran against him, who lost by the 11,000 votes, she announced that she was running like back in March. So she's going to run this campaign for 2 years. And I mean, he has no wiggle room now. And so hopefully, you know, we can get to a couple of other congressional districts. I think, too, the thing that I would love to see is the Nurses Association come in and get a bunch of rural nurses to run for some of these seats, even if it's just like a long shot.
Yeah.
Because that could be like the second you have a rural hospital that closes, you've got a nurse out there being like, I worked there, you know, we could have kept this open, but he voted against it. So, I mean, that would be lovely to see. And the thing is it doesn't have to be partisan, right? Like, you could run against a Republican in the primary. You could run as a Democrat or as an America Party person.
Well, they're going to have a lot of money because, you know, I look at the America thing and I'm going, you know, could you be any more transparent? And this is just a scheme to get attention. No. But, you know, again, I come back to this bill. And as I started the show off today, you know, the people, the most vulnerable are the ones that are going to be harmed by it the most. We know the disabled, we know the homeless, we know the low-income workers, the folks at the very bottom, the most vulnerable, they're going to be hit by it the most. And I find it interesting that the people who tell us how Christian they are the ones who've literally taken food from the hungry, healthcare from the sick, harmed the elderly, kicked the homeless. You go down the list of all the things that Jesus said not to do, that they did. And then, oh, by the way, that Freedom Caucus group who squawks about debt and deficits all the time, not one of them had the courage to actually stand up and vote again. What?
Yeah, that is really surprising to me. I mean, too, I expect the right wing, evangelicals to be, you know, all on board with Trump no matter what he does, even if he, you know, if he killed Christ himself, they'd find some justification for it. But it's like, this is a really good opportunity for the new Pope to kind of stick his nose in and do so in with the consistency of the Catholic message. That would be an amazing thing. But yeah, there's I mean, God help you if you're a rural pregnant person. Like, imagine being in a rural county where the nearest hospital is now going to be an hour away. And, you know, you're going to have to just hope that your water doesn't break, you know, out in, while you're canning something or whatever. You know, like, it's...
What do you think people in rural areas do?
I don't know. I mean, well, the thing is my friend actually is canning a bunch of stuff on the farm right now. So... And I'm trying to like get her to FedEx me some stuff.
No, so. It's interesting that you bring the Pope into this because, you know, the reality is God is angry at us. If you look at the weather lately, if you look at the storms we've had lately, I mean, you look at Texas. This is if there was a Democrat in the White House, you know that the evangelicals would be going, God's angry. God is smiting us because of all of fill in the blank. We don't hear the evangelicals talking about how angry God is when people are dying in Texas of a flood.
Yeah, the really frustrating thing has been seeing some of the Republican leaders down there say that, you know, try and figure out a way to blame the National Weather Service. And they're just like, you know, we didn't know that it was going to be like this. I'm pretty sure that if you go back and look at some of the forecasts, they definitely were saying that it was going to be raining for several days. I don't think that they knew how much rain they were going to get. And I think that probably has something to do with cutting, you know, a couple of thousand jobs from the National Weather Service and and from NOAA. And so this idea that you think, I mean, we were warning, right? A couple of months ago, we were saying, this is going to kill people.
Yep.
You know, this is, there are not going to be adequate enough warnings because people aren't working 24 hours, 7 days a week anymore. And I feel like over and over again, we were warning that something like this was going to happen. And I'll be darned if that's exactly what didn't happen. I mean, it's like, and at the same time, like I said, you've got Kristi Noem who's commenting on this, trying to figure out a way to blame Joe Biden. And I'm like, you guys cut all the scientists. Like, what did you think was going to happen?
And also, the only argument that I've heard that they've made, well, you know, they've got antiquated stuff. You go, yeah. Remember Screwquester from a number of years ago? Remember all of the cuts that you were screaming and crying about? Remember all of the, we're going to make government so small we can drag it in the bathtub and drown it? Remember all of that? You want to know why our systems are antiquated? You didn't invest in them. You gave billionaires tax cuts.
It's the same kind of thing that we were seeing last week. I think it was Duffy, the transportation secretary, was trying to figure out a way to blame Pete Buttigieg and Joe Biden for the problems in Newark. And I was like, but the problems in Newark didn't happen until after you cut air traffic control staff at like the end of April, early May. So explain to me why everything was fine until you guys took over and you guys ushered in a whole bunch of DOGE cuts. And then all of a sudden things broke. And again, this is like, we've been warning you about this. And I hate to say I told you so, but I would love to have, you know, like a big tour of Hillary Clinton and Kamala Harris just walking around being like, we told you, yeah. Drop mic.
No, look, we all did. I mean, the reality is we are where we are. And all the conversations I've been having over the weekend were, look, you know, you knew this was coming. This is what you voted for. The suffering, as I've been saying since election night, the solutions will come out of the suffering due to their savagery. We see the savagery right in front of us. We know what's coming. And in 3 years, when all of the sweeteners go away, we're going to be left with a sour taste in our mouth and an empty stomach.
The thing is, too, that makes me really sad is that we've seen Donald Trump basically screw over a whole bunch of states who have needed disaster money. We saw him do it to Sarah Huckabee Sanders, which is like, dude, if you're going to do it to her, everybody is going to be screwed over. So, you know, all of this money that Texas is going to need either for cleanup or, you know, for FEMA cash and for people who lost their homes, there's a whole bunch of money that they're not going to get because Donald Trump's government has spent the last, you know, 5-6 months talking about how, well, you know, like that's the thing is you just need a, you need a strong governor who's able to contribute more money to that.
And the other side of this is we don't have money to put into FEMA because we spent a whole bunch of money on ICE and we're kicking all the people out who would do your cleanup.
Yeah. The thing that's crazy is ICE went bankrupt. What was it, like a couple weeks ago? And so I'm just like sitting back being like, how are they going to do this? Because the new budget doesn't start until September. So what are y'all going to do for the next couple of months? And I don't know. I'm not smart enough to know how that works.
They're going to privatize it. They're going to contract it out to Plantar or Blackwater or somebody. And now we've got, this isn't your grandparents' Nazi party.
That's for sure.
We're privatizing the stormtroopers.
That, and then putting anybody who, you know, protests against it in a tent in the Everglades.
Yeah, and this is where I just had this conversation. I said, look, he goes, well, you know, I'll fight it. And I go, you know, they're just going to scoop you up and then throw you out because, oh, by the way, you don't have due process rights anymore because they've just steamrolled due process because that's what due process is. Well, I would fight it. Who are you going to fight it to when they ship you to El Salvador?
That scares the hell out of me because it's you know, you have all of these folks who are also being picked up and they are legitimate citizens. And they're like, well, you can just tell the judge about this. And it's like, what judge?
What judge?
There's no judge anymore. What? There's no due process anymore. So you're not, there's nobody to tell. And I don't think that people are fully understanding how terrifying that is and what it means not to have that anymore. But again, thank John Roberts, your Chief Justice of the Supreme Court. For
there you go. Sarah Burris, Raw Story. Check out the website, rawstory.com, if you want to see her work. Sarah, as always, great stuff.
Thanks. Have a good rest of the week, everyone.
Our good friend Sarah Burris. Want to hear your thoughts? Email me, rick@therickSmithShow.com. Got to take a quick break. Right back after this. Stick around. This is The Rick Smith Show. I'm Rick Smith, and this is Labor History in Two. On this day in labor history, the year was 1998. That was the first day of a 48-hour general strike in Puerto Rico. The strike was called in support of telephone workers who had walked off the job 3 weeks earlier. The workers were protesting government plans to sell off the publicly owned telephone service to GTE, a private company based out of Connecticut. As the strike of the telephone workers continued, more and more Puerto Ricans rallied to their cause. A general strike was endorsed by more than 50 unions, along with other civic, political, and religious groups. The group of organizations leading the strike went by the acronym CHAOS. For 2 days, the general strike shut down almost all activity in the nation. Work at stores, banks, and the halls of government ground to a halt. Transportation ground to a halt as bus drivers and taxi cab drivers took to the picket line. Many in the crowd waved Puerto Rican flags. In the streets, the chant could be heard, Hilga, Hilga, or Strike, Strike. Many also chanted, Never surrender. The telephone company belongs to the people. The strike won support outside of Puerto Rico as well. The Health and Hospital Workers Union 1199 in New York issued a statement of solidarity and a $100,000 donation to help support the cause. After the success and support of the general strike, the telephone workers remained on the picket line. The strike wore on for 41 days. In the end, GTE won the day. The company promised not to retaliate against any striking workers. But when they took over, the company reduced staffing through so-called voluntary layoffs and early retirements. This is yet another chapter in the fight against privatization. Labor History in Two, brought to you by the Illinois Labor History Society and The Rick Smith Show.
You're listening to The Rick Smith Show, where working people come to talk.
So I gotta tell you, you know, a lot of email from the weekend of people not thrilled with the big, beautiful bill, even with the the sweeteners, not a lot of love for what they're doing. In fact, most anger at the, interestingly enough, my Red Hat friends kind of mad at the Freedom Caucus, because you know they were like, hey, this is the firewall. These are the people who are going to do what we want them to do. Go after those people, you know, the immigrants and the gays and the lesbians and the others. This is cutting into us. This is the food stamps. This is the Section 8. This is the Medicaid. This is the safety net that a lot of rural people, as well as urban, but a lot of the Trump base uses. And it kind of, interestingly enough, struck home. So, you know, as I'm going through and I'm compiling what my Red Hat crowd is saying, this is not popular. And it's not surprising that Trump and his pollsters are trying to figure out how they're going to rebrand this, because it is what it is. It's Robin Hood in reverse. This is robbing from the poor to give to the rich. There's no other way to frame this. And, you know, I've had a lot of the right-wing sycophants, you know, going, but, you know, no tax on tips, until you read the, you know, the fine print. It's only 3 years. Let's start with that. And then it goes back. And then, oh, by the way, it's not directly into your check. It's a deduction. It's going to be complicated, and there are hurdles in place to ensure that working people don't get to it. That's by design. Same thing with the no tax on overtime. It was interesting listening to people, you know, debate the misinformation around what that actually means. Because most of the people that I talked to said, I'm going to work overtime, no tax on overtime. And you go, no, that's not what it says. It says no tax on the half of the time and a half, but you still got to put in the time to get to the time and a half. And it's only, again, a certain level for a certain amount. And when you start throwing that out, they go, well, that's not what was promised. No, it's not. But here's the thing. This is where I was talking about with Sarah. A lot of bad stuff in this. A lot of pain and suffering. A lot of things are going to upset people. A lot of stomachs are going to be empty. And like the old labor frame, when stomachs are empty, heads get right. And come 2028, well, come 2026, when Democrats better take back the House and at least be very competitive in the Senate, it's up to us. Vote. If you're allowed. And this is the other thing that keeps popping up. Hearing a whispering of actual credible people saying that there might not be a fair election. And it's interesting to me, the very people who are crying about, you know, they're cheating. Anybody surprised that they would be doing it? Clearly not. So for me, this is an opportunity. And I've had a lot of people who are, you know, down, glum. Oh, this is horrible. It's the end of America. You go, maybe. But this is when you ball up your digits and you get in there and you mix it up. This is when the fight begins. This is when the organizing. This is when the coming together. This is when the community. This is when shoulder to shoulder, neighbor to neighbor, friend to friend. This is when we build. You know, the New Deal didn't just happen. Decades of organizing. So for me, there's an opportunity here. And the hope is that we take it. The hope is that we seize it. The hope is that we start talking to each other again. And in a way where we start demanding stuff like better health care, like better wages, hours, conditions, like better infrastructure, better education, you know, stuff that they didn't really address. In fact, you could argue they made worse. So those rural communities who got all that investment from Joe Biden that they're stripping away probably might want to remember that come 2026 and beyond. Just kind of my thought. Want to hear yours? Email me, rick@thericksmithshow.com. Miss any portion of the program, make sure you grab the podcast. Wherever you get your favorite podcast, you'll find ours. And as always, thanks so much for being here. We'll see you back here next time.
You've been listening to The Rick Smith Show. Email Rick. Email Rick at rick@therickssmithshow.com. Until next time, this has been The Rick Smith Show, where working people come to talk.
This is locally grown radio.
WFHR 1320 AM, W248DE Wisconsin Rapids.
And always streaming on the Civic Media app.
This is CBS News on the Hour, sponsored by O'Reilly Auto Parts.
I'm Jennifer Kuiper. At least 104 people have died in Texas flooding, most of them in Kerr County. CBS's Maurice Dubois is there.
We made our way to Camp Mystic along the Guadalupe River in Hunt, Texas, an all-girls Christian summer camp that was destroyed.
It's like a needle in a haystack.
Yeah. Inside the camp, we met Fletcher Cordell as he searched for what was left of his 11-year-old daughter's belongings. Olivia was rescued by helicopter as the deadly river rose 26 feet in less than an hour. 27 campers and counselors were killed in the flash flooding, including 18-year-old Chloe Childress, a counselor who had just graduated from high school.
One person is dead and two are missing in flash flooding in central North Carolina from what